In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Remember a few weeks ago I asked, is there any government agency that you trust right now? I can't think of one. Well, since then, we've had the Sussman trial, which did not go the way that justice would have had it. But what was important was they had witnesses under oath who admitted that the whole Russia collusion hoax was Hillary's idea and that she personally approved its launch. The whole thing was fake. And yet they launched multiple official investigations, all based on a lie. Think about that. Obama, Comey, Biden, Hillary, and all the rest looked right into the camera and lied to your face. Last week, we told you about the lawsuit in Washington County. The county and the state of Oregon are suing a voter, trying desperately to prevent the release of a database. This week, we're continuing that discussion on election integrity. Lots to talk about with Don Power on what he was unable to cover last week. And then Dr. Douglas Frank, who discovered the algorithm the deep state used to rig the elections. Let's dive right in. Don Powers is part of a nationwide election integrity group that has been helping to expose the lack of election integrity all across the country. Don, it is great to talk to you again.
Well, it's great to be here. You know, there's a lot going on. It's been a little chaotic. And of course, as a result, you know, people already coming into this election were concerned back about the 2020 election. Now we've got all this chaos going. It certainly didn't do much good, or certainly didn't help instill a confidence in our elections.
No, it sure did not. In fact, if anything, it looks like they're trying to find new ways to game the system. And we really wanted to have you back on to talk about a couple things that we had discussed off air with you, but just didn't have time to discuss on air. Things that you had personally witnessed while observing the count there in Clackamas County. And just a quick reminder for folks, a barcode on the ballots was spoiled. It was blamed on the printer, who said that they were able to scan it fine on their end, so they were puzzled why Clackamas County couldn't scan it. The county at first had said it was just a few ballots, and then pretty soon it became thousands of ballots, which eventually became over 100,000 ballots. They then began hand transferring the votes on spoiled ballots to new ones that could then be scanned, calling in county workers to do so when the task became overwhelming. So what was concerning to us is the adjudication process that you personally witnessed, along with all of the rest of the mess. But before we get there, can you describe the overall scene, the physical layout of things, where you were, where the ballots are being processed, the various teams and whatnot?
Yes, I was down at the Clackamas County Elections Office. And they've got it set up where there's people duplicating the ballots. They're in a room, and you're in what essentially is a hallway with big windows. And you can kind of look, you know, look through the windows and see them copying over the ballots, right? Copying over the ones that wouldn't scan. And then there's towards the end of the hallway, there's another set of windows. And in that room, you can see people who are looking at ballots that the system couldn't process due to not being able to recognize voter intent. So you have people there adjudicating and determining voter intent. So between those two things, I did see a couple of things that frustrated me. We touched on one of them last time, and that was that the two people are sitting there orally, you know, telling each other what's on the ballot, and the other person's copying, you know, writing down what the first person said. And I think it would be better if they were to also have a visual check, because if a person were so inclined, they could say something to the other person, and they could intentionally say, you know, for example, if you've got candidate A, B, and C, this person could say, oh, it's candidate B. The other person writes down B, but they know darn well that they're looking at C. Mm-hmm. And then when they swap and double and check, the same thing. Person just reads out B, right? But the first person goes, I know that it's really C, so I'm just going to say, yep, because I made it B. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. So
sure.
They know that they changed it, and they know when it's called
sure.
back.
Sure, and you're not saying that necessarily happened, but that was just certainly potential for fraud. And probably the most alarming thing that you mentioned to us was the adjudication process. This is something we talked about after the show. Where you had actually witnessed them unvoting people effectively.
Exactly.
So describe what you saw there.
Yeah, well, that was really frustrating because I went down to the end of the hallway where they were looking at voter intent, and I was watching them, this particular team. The idea is that they're sitting in front of the screen. They're looking at images of ballots that a voter, has crossed out, essentially. And perhaps they voted for somebody, then they crossed that out because that's, they changed their mind or whatnot, and then filled in a different bubble, right? Now, there's two kind of scenarios. One was where they crossed that person out and they wrote somebody in, and they uncheck, the person that's not, the one that's not eligible and whatnot. And that seemed to make sense to me. But as I'm watching, I saw multiple times where there's people that are listed on the ballot whose names are on the ballot. And it's very clear to me, the one bubble is filled in nicely and the other bubble is X'd out. And I watched them uncheck the person who, the bubble, if you will, that was clearly marked. And I thought to myself, hey, wait a minute, it seems very clear to me that that's the voter's intent, because there's a huge X through the one above it that's, unmistakable. So it seems odd that they're unchecking that one. And having extensive software background, I started to think from a user interface that it only makes sense that you pick the one that they wanted. But maybe the system is saying they're clicking on this because they're telling the system that this is the one. They're saying this is the one, but then the little bubble instantly disappears. Where when you're looking at the screen and you see it filled in by a voter, when that person clicks on it, it actually disappears. So that part was alarming to me, because they click on where it's filled in, and then it's gone. It disappears. Yeah. And it's like, how do you, and that's a little magic trick.
And that is terribly suspicious that these votes are effectively disappearing. We need to take a break. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Don Powers talking about election integrity and what has been happening up in Clackamas County. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking about election integrity again this week. This is a carryover from last week. And if you missed that show, be sure to head to iSpyRadio.com and you can download the podcast version of that. And we're talking again with Don Powers. He is the co-chair of election integrity for the Oregon Republican Party and also part of a nationwide election integrity group that has been helping to expose election problems all across the country. And Don, you were talking about these votes on screen that were disappearing. So can you pick that up from there?
Yeah. So like I said, they were, what appeared to be unselecting what was, to me, the clear voter's intent. So again, because of my pretty extensive software background, I'm trying to think it through logically. I don't want to assume, anything nefarious, but, and I still don't think it was necessarily nefarious, but I'm looking at it and I wait a few times and I watch it happen about a dozen times. And I'm thinking, I'm trying to find some logic behind it. I don't see it. So I asked the supervisor to come over and she sends somebody over to me, which was, everybody was very polite and very curious. They came over and I told them what I saw. They tried to explain it away. And I said, well, no, that's not what I saw. That's not at all what I saw. I saw this. And I said, okay, we'll go look. So they go in and look, and the supervisor, you can't hear what they're saying, but the supervisor does go over to that particular team, stops them, pulls a couple of things up, and begins to go back into some of the adjudicated ballots and actually correct them because they were doing it improperly. And then the supervisor or the other assistant comes out and tells me that, well, you see, they were doing this and it wasn't that. And what you saw was because of the write-ins. I'm like, no, it's not where the write-ins were. I'm telling you, I watched it very clearly. Four, three names, however many are there, X'd out. They were unchecking it. And when I said to them, I just thought, well, maybe it makes sense that the system, they're clicking, telling the system, this is the one the person wanted, which again, still bothered me because that means it didn't appear to be marked any longer on the ballot. It's not on there. I watched the dot disappear.
Right. So that's the question that I have is because they're doing all of this electronically, they have scanned a ballot and now they're using that scan of that ballot to then make corrections. So the question is it creating a new ballot image that replaces the original, or is it, keeping copies? Do you know anything about that process?
Well, I have heard in other places where the software, and we've seen this by a study that was done a couple of years ago, where the software is designed and these students created the ability within seconds to completely change bubbles, to literally change the voter intent and recreate the ballot. Now, they're obviously not affecting the original one, but they're affecting the ballot image.
Right.
And the only way that you would ever know or be able to ever clarify that is if you had some suspicion and you knew which ballots had been changed, but you don't, because you don't, as a voter, you can't even go look at your ballot, right? You can only know that it was processed, but you can't go and say, yep, that's my ballot, and that's how I voted it. So if that's happening in the machine, from what I saw, until I get a better explanation, it looked to me like that dot was, well, it didn't look to me, that ballot was disappearing. And so if that image is being saved, that vote no longer is on the ballot image. So that concerns me. So then I mentioned to them, I said, well, if they've been doing this the wrong way, maybe we need to go back into that particular team's session, whenever they started their session, whether it was, I think that team started like 1:30 in the afternoon, and correct, you know, and check all of their, because if for some reason they got mixed up with the process, misunderstood the instructions, maybe we need to go back and look at all of the ones that they've adjudicated and make sure they were, you know, they were doing it properly. And at first they tried to, oh, they've only been here for a little while, we checked a few of them, and it's not really enough to affect anything. And I said, well, that's not the point, you guys. It's the whole problem with this whole election integrity issue is that everybody thinks it's necessarily about turning something over, which, you know, if that's the case, as a result of overturning all this fraud that we've seen around the country, then that's the case. That's the right thing. But it's more importantly, it's about the right thing, about doing what's right. It's about the processes being done well. It's about the voter being able to have confidence that their vote was cast and it was cast exactly as they cast it. Right. It's one thing to turn in your ballot. It's another thing to know the way you filled out your ballot is what went into the system and what was counted. And then your vote is not being negated by illegal ballots or any other kind of nefarious things or even honest mistakes like what I feel was happening here with this team. It seemed that they got some instructions, you know, inverted in their process.
Well, it's crazy to think that the supervisor is telling you that somehow this doesn't matter, couldn't affect anything, because right now there's a race up there in Clackamas County that last I'd heard was separated by 2 votes. So yeah, it does matter.
Yeah.
And you know, as far as why these spoiled ballots matter is, we know that Oregon is a petri dish for the left. They try out ideology and rules and methods here before trying it somewhere else. Is the spoiled barcode a new method being tested here that they could try out somewhere else? Because it seems like this is a gateway. Oh gosh, we had all these spoiled barcodes, and now we have to transfer the alleged wishes of these voters. I mean, that just seems like that opens yet another can of worms.
Well, it's a messy process. You're thinking, well, if you've got time to redraw every single one of these ballots, couldn't you just kind of go back to paper ballots counted by hand?
Yeah.
It would be a lot faster to count them by hand than it would be to fill them all back out and then put them into a machine that we don't have confidence in. And, you know, speaking of the barcode, so I took an image now. Right now, actually, I noticed that the Clackamas County Elections Division has a picture of the barcodes on their website, one showing a good, clear, clean one, and another one showing one of the, quote, spoiled ones. But if you go onto that website and you take your phone and you download a free barcode scan it reader, mm-hmm. it will scan that ballot. And I've done it with my phone. I took pictures at the office there a couple of weeks ago of the two different ones. They were nice enough to let me take a picture of, you know, a good one and a spoiled one. And I've had people use their phone and just scan the image that's on my phone, and it scans. So I don't understand.
Yeah, so the question is, why can't Washington County scan those? That is very odd.
Clackamas.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Clackamas, yeah. You're right, yes.
Why are their scanners not scanning it? That does not seem to pass muster, and to me, the sniff test of saying, you know, of saying why isn't it passing?
Well, Don, unfortunately, we are up against the clock with you. I want to thank you so much for your time, and we're just going to have to continue to have you back as more and more things come out there about Clackamas County.
Excellent. I look forward to it. Thank you.
To continue our discussion on election integrity, I'd like to welcome Dr. Douglas Frank to the show. He is a world-renowned physicist with 60 peer-reviewed scientific publications. But his latest claim to fame and why we wanted to talk to him is because he discovered the algorithms being employed to manipulate our elections. And he's been touring Oregon this last week, so we're especially happy to have him on. Dr. Frank, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a delight to be here.
So I'm really curious why you're touring Oregon, since we don't have any election integrity issues here, and we can 100% trust our elections, and we know this to be true because our dear leaders told us we can trust them. So I am curious why you're here. What have you been talking to Oregonians about?
That's a great question. I've actually been talking to 40 states, and about a year ago I was in southern Washington, and someone from Oregon came up and heard that talk, and ever since then, she's been gathering data for me and sending it to me. And for one reason or another, not on purpose, it took this long for me to end up in your state. Now, I was originally scheduled just to come and give one talk, and then suddenly it was three. And then suddenly I extended my stay for 3 days because you people in Oregon are hungry for what I've been telling you.
Yes.
It's been a full schedule. I've been going for almost a week straight, several talks a day throughout the state. And I think it's a real eye-opener what I'm showing the residents of Oregon, what's going on. So I show them my algorithms. I show them their own data. I show them their own registration rolls. And I think most excitingly and most recently, I show them the fact that your own attorney general has admitted to your entire state in writing, in person, that your election machines are hackable, which is quite the revelation, given the fact that they've been telling everybody for so long that everything's all secure.
Yeah, you're talking about the case up in Washington County with Tim Sipple?
Yes, sir. Yep. I'm going to be an expert witness in that case.
That's what we
heard.
I've
already been working with the attorneys on that, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good. So in terms of just looking at Oregon in general, what are some of the biggest problems you see that are just ripe for election fraud or, in fact, are already being exploited for election fraud here in Oregon?
Okay, well, let's start with something really simple. You have registration rolls, and in those rolls, you're supposed to have a list of everybody who lives here, who's qualified to vote. That's what those rolls are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the rolls, you can just do a simple first observation that there are more people in those rolls than you have people. Okay, so you already know that you have a bunch of people in your rolls who are not qualified to vote, because how can you have more people in the rolls than you have people? So that's a first major symptom in your state. The next thing is you use mail-in ballots for everybody.
Right.
Now, this idea of ballot stuffing is coming into the public consciousness now because of 2,000 mules. People are seeing with their own eyes the stuffing of ballots that I've been telling everybody across the country has been going on. I've been telling everybody since December of 2020 that's the way the elections are being stolen. And I think the key thing that people need to understand is that when you see a ballot being stuffed illegally, the key idea is that that ballot has to have a name assigned to it. You can't just stick an empty ballot in. The ballot has a voter's name assigned to it, which is why it's so important to have inflated voter rolls if you're going to cheat the election.
Sure.
You need a bunch of names of people who are not actually really going to vote so that when you stuff that ballot, you have a name to assign it to. So the fact that you have more people in your rolls than you have people, that's a huge alarm, a huge red flag. And then you have the ballot stuffing taking place, and we can confirm that, by the way, by canvassing. I can talk to you a little bit about that if you like.
Yes.
But the bottom line is you're set up for fraud in a major way for two reasons. One, you have no chain of custody on the ballots as you're sending them out. And two, you've got more names than you need in your rolls. Now, there's one thing about mail-in ballots that most people don't think about, and that's the fact that the United States Postal Service takes great pride in tracking every ballot. If you go to the USPS websites, they even talk about, you know, it's a sacred trust they have that they know where every ballot is all the time. And that sounds good at first, but if you think about it, that means somebody knows every ballot that's been mailed out and somebody knows every ballot that's been returned. And more importantly, they know every ballot that hasn't been returned. And so if you have a list of the voters in your state and you know every ballot that's not been returned, you can print a ballot and turn in a ballot for that person. That's called ballot stuffing. And so that makes you especially vulnerable. Other states are not quite so vulnerable because it's trickier to track the ballots, but you make it easy. You mail them in, and so the post office keeps track of everything, and they sell that service, actually. Politicians buy that service so that they know who's not yet returned a ballot so that they can go knock on that door and say, hey, vote for me.
So that's interesting because I knew that the politicians, especially the parties, will take a look at the ballot return rate. I always assumed that was coming through the Secretary of State's office and through the elections. You're saying it's actually a service done by the United States Post Office.
Yes. And many clerks who are receiving the ballots, they don't even need to look in the box where all the ballots are. The USPS gives them the list for them automatically.
Wow.
Because the USPS can tell them every ballot they've received. From a clerk's point of view, it's a great service, right? I mean, you log in the morning when you come into the office, and there's the list of everybody whose ballot came in that day. It's a nice service. So I understand the convenience aspect of it from a clerk's perspective, and I understand the political opportunity of it from a politician's perspective. But what people don't think about is the fact that then the bad guys also know who's not returned a ballot.
Yep. And that's rather frightening. Okay, let's take a break a little bit early. We have so much more to talk about with Dr. Douglas Frank. He has been examining election integrity across the country, and coming up we'll be talking about that algorithm that he's famous for. Stay with us. Back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today with Dr. Douglas Frank. That name rings a bell. He is nationally known for his work to expose the lack of election integrity across the nation, and he was featured in two of Mike Lindell's documentaries because he discovered several of the algorithms used to manipulate our elections. Dr. Frank has been working with dozens of teams all across the country for election reform, and he's been touring Oregon the last week or so. And Dr. Frank, I'm still just kind of shocked by this notion that the USPS is out there letting people know which ballots have been returned. Not that it's an aggregate that, 20% of ballots have been returned and then 30% and so on, but they're actually verifying the individual voters. And of course, that's a huge problem. So why is it that they feel the need to announce to everybody, not the numbers of ballots, but just the actual individuals? I think that's a huge security flaw.
Well, it's public information. You know, people are under the misunderstanding that voting is private. It's not. Voting is a public action. When you vote, the fact that you voted by law is public information. And the reason is because I have the right as another, I'm not really an Oregonian citizen, but let's say that I were, I have the right to challenge your right to vote as a citizen. I could go to the judge and say, hey, this person doesn't have the right to vote. He's not a citizen. And I can challenge that. So it's not a private thing that you voted. So there's nothing that requires that to be kept private, which is why when a citizen goes to the clerk and says, I'd like a list of everybody who voted, the clerks will typically provide that information.
See, I find that part okay. It's the notion that they're letting everybody know which individuals have voted prior to election day. I don't mind if they do it afterwards, but if you're announcing it going into it, you know, as you said earlier, you know which ones haven't voted, and so then you can manufacture ballots for them. Why not simply keep that hidden and just give it percentage-wise rather than the actual individuals that had voted?
I don't disagree with you. In fact, I 100% agree that the way I like to describe it is before the polls close, everything should be dark.
Yes.
No one should know any tallies, and no one should know who has voted.
Exactly.
And then after the polls close, everything should be transparent. You should know the number of ballots immediately so that they can't stuff more ballots later.
Yep.
You should know every person who has voted. Everything should be transparent after that. Now, it's not just the Postal Service. In many states that have early voting, the counties actually publicly release a list of every single person who has voted up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not merely the USPS. That's just a service they provide and sell. and it's a subscription service. So it's not like the USPS is being evil or anything. Many states provide that information on a daily basis.
Well, you can still be evil, but you can just be evil accidentally.
Or complicit or something. Yes. But in that simple piece of information, who has not voted, that mm-hmm. one piece of information enables all sorts yep. of illegal activity around elections.
Absolutely.
And we should not allow that. I mean, and that's one of the major flaws of Oregon's system, because everything is by mail. So you sort of built it in. Now, my understanding is many Oregonians don't return their ballot by mail. Instead, they return it in person. So in that case, the local clerk would check in the ballot, of course, when they receive it, and then their rolls or their election management system, it's called their EMS, mm-hmm. would record the fact that ballot's been returned. And local clerks do provide that information to local politicians because they want to know who's not yet returned their ballot. So it's not illegal. It's public information. It just makes our elections far less secure.
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. So I had asked this last week of our guest, Attorney Stephen Jonkis, and I'd like your take on it, because it seems like our elections now are effectively being run by private entities. Private companies make the voting machines, and they make and control the software that then counts those votes, and then they claim it's all proprietary, that the public isn't allowed to look under the hood. You just have to trust us. And I think that was really one of the more eye-opening aspects to me, anyway, of 2020. I had no idea that our elections were now effectively big business, that states were paying huge amounts of money to companies like Dominion and all these other ones, billions of dollars collectively. So when did that happen? When did it shift to essentially the private companies running so much of our elections?
Well, it was gradual, you know, the frog in the pot situation.
Right.
Starting, say, around 2000, after hanging Chadville, around the country, people started switching to scanned ballot images. Those images are then processed digitally. And so the systems became more complicated. And then also the election management systems, where they maintain the electronic voter rolls, those began to become centralized because of federal law. Federal law requires secretaries of states to maintain voter records for every county. So over time, the election companies were providing a service, frankly, because the clerks don't have the ability to do it themselves. They have to comply with all these regulations, which, by the way, are a really bad idea. The regulations themselves are bad ideas. But the clerks can't do that, and they're basically overwhelmed with the tasks they have at hand. So, you know, companies have basically exploited that opportunity, which is not a bad business opportunity, to help meet these needs. But now we've developed these systems that are behemoth. They're these massively complicated systems. They're insecure. Multiple ways they're insecure. The clerks barely have time to manage the election as it is. Some counties are so overwhelmed, they just don't even do their own elections. You were talking about trusting the vendors. Well, some counties just hire the whole thing out to the vendors. They don't even run the election themselves. They're so overwhelmed. So you talk about trusting the machines or trusting the software. How about trusting your entire election to someone else?
Exactly right.
I just think it's preposterous. I like using the metaphor. I say, you know, you could pay somebody to raise your children, but it comes out far better if you would use your own two hands. Oh. And I think we've been paying other people to do our governments. We've been paying other people to do our education. Mm-hmm. And we've been paying other people to do our elections. And these are all super critical things in our culture. We should be doing them with our own two hands. And we're sort of suffering now the consequences of that sort of lackadaisical or laziness or willingness to not do the work ourselves and to pay somebody else. Well, now we're suffering the consequences.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we are up against the clock. I promise in this next segment, we will talk about that algorithm. More with Dr. Douglas Frank. And welcome back. We're talking today to Dr. Douglas Frank about election integrity. He is a world-renowned physicist with over 60 peer-reviewed scientific publications, but his claim to fame is the algorithm that he discovered that was being employed to manipulate our elections. So let's get into that. Can you explain to us, first of all, our audience, what an algorithm is?
Yes, an algorithm is, you know, it's a technical term we use in math and science. Basically, it's just a set of steps that you follow to carry out a task. So, for example, a recipe in the kitchen, that's an algorithm. You follow a set of steps and you end up with chocolate chip cookies. So the word is just a technical way of saying it's a set of steps you follow. In computer programming, we like to use the word algorithms because we'll have a whole set of subroutines and other programs that are just basically, let's perform this set of tasks. Let's perform that set of tasks. Well, how are we going to perform that task? Well, we write an algorithm for that task. So it's just a set of steps. And as a programmer myself and a person who designs electronics, when I began looking at election data for started in Pennsylvania at the request of the Pennsylvania State Legislature, I recognized certain telltale signs of algorithms that were operating. And, you know, if you see something random happening, you don't see patterns. But if you see something that's happening in a prescribed way, you recognize that there's an algorithm operating. And since I had access to so much data, and since that's one of my fields of expertise, I was able to sort of back figure out what was going on. So, you know, when Mike made, Mr. Lindell made the movies about me, he was talking basically about two of the algorithms that I'd uncovered. The first one, basically, let's say you want to inflate your voter rolls so that you're preparing for the election that's coming, because you need to have extra phantom voters in the rolls. Well, how do you do that? Do you just add a million 60-year-olds? No, that would be obvious. So you need to add them in some kind of age distribution. And if I were a computer programmer and I were trying to do this artificially, I would want to have some kind of limit. And so I would look up the 2010 census, because that's the most detailed census we have of the country. I would shift it 10 years later so that I would, you know, the shape of the census, the shape of the age distribution would match what it currently is. And then I would use that as my upper limit. And that's what I discovered was happening, that all across the country, they're using the shape of the 2010 census to stuff our rolls. It's kind of like an upper limit. And well, so that's the first algorithm that I uncovered. Go ahead.
How did you identify that as being an algorithm rather than simply just a product of what it would normally be? I mean, because if you looked at the census 10 years ago and you pull that forward, it would match that fairly. So what told you that was artificial?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Well, because the distribution, the age distribution in every county isn't the same as the national census. It was different in every county. So if I find the same shape in every county, regardless whether or not the population follows that or not, that's suspicious. And as I was doing the calculations, I was able to get, there's a term we use in statistics called the correlation coefficient. Mm-hmm. The correlation coefficients, you say, well, gee, if I predict a certain set of results based upon the starting parameters, if I can have a perfect fit to my prediction, then that would be a correlation coefficient. We use the letter R for that. The correlation would be a perfect 1.0. Well, I was getting correlation coefficients all over the country of 0.995, which is just preposterous. Random things don't happen that way. Mm-hmm. There. Mm-hmm. Now, the correlation you mentioned is valid. There is some natural correlation to the census, of course. And so what I've noticed is that in some states where they have centralized voter systems and centralized voter rolls, I can predict the shape of the voting, the ages of the voters, to ridiculous accuracy, like 0.995 kinds of things. But in states where they don't have the centralized rolls, I'm only in the 0.7, 0.8 range. So in other words, the outcome of the election, the outcome of the voter distribution, depends on which election system is being used. That's a smoking gun that an algorithm is operating.
Oh, absolutely. And, that's a smoking gun.
The more centralized the roles are maintained and controlled, the more accurately and the more fine-tuned I can predict it. So for example, in every state, I'm able to predict at the county level what's going to occur based upon the algorithms. But in only certain states can I predict it all the way to the precinct level. And the thing that's in common about the states where I can predict it down to the precinct level is that those are states which maintain centrally controlled rolls and centrally controlled elections. And Oregon's one of those. So, for example, I can go into any precinct in your state and I can tell you the number of Republicans who are going to vote in that precinct, plus or minus 1%. Wow. And whereas if I were to go into Kentucky, where they don't have centralized rolls with centralized elections, it's something like plus or minus 20%. I can't predict it accurately.
Wow.
So that's a smoking gun,
yeah,
that's rolls are being controlled.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that was going to be one of my questions is, you know, watching that video there with that interview between you and Mike, was that the proof of your algorithm and the proof that this is fraud would be to find an area that does not use those machines. And sure enough, that's exactly what you did. So what was the other algorithm that you discovered?
Well, the first algorithm is how do you stuff the rolls, right? That's the first thing you would do if you were preparing to seal. The next algorithm I show people is how do you then decide in those rolls who to assign ballots to, and how many votes to attribute to a given precinct or given county. So, in other words, there are multiple steps, and I'm just giving you, you know, two examples. And in that case, I'm able to predict whether it's a big county, small county, urban county, rural county, black county, white county, green county, doesn't matter, you know, Amish county. I'm able to tell you the age distribution of the voters in absolutely every county. And in places where the rolls are centralized, I can tell you the age distribution of the voters, even down to the precinct level, like I can in Oregon. Whereas when I'm in an example state, I used as a counter example a minute ago, Kentucky, I cannot do that. I can only go to the county level there. Hmm. So that's two algorithms that I basically described to you. One, how do you decide who to put into the rolls? And then the next one is how do you decide who votes, or how do you assign, how to assign a ballot? There's the Mesa 3 report that Mike Lindell released several months ago described how the machines themselves, this is a whole nother algorithm, how the machines themselves were reassigning voters. And let me explain that. Let's say you vote and you go into vote or you turn in your ballot and the clerk says, I'm sorry, sir, but you've already voted.
Right.
That means somebody's already turned in a ballot for you. Somebody's already stuffed a ballot. Well, right now the algorithm can detect that happening. And it will do is it will unassign that stuffed ballot that it gave as had assigned to you previously. It'll reassign it to somebody else to allow you to vote. And that's another algorithm that we've uncovered.
Wow.
So that's an example of a third algorithm. So all, you know, computers are stupid. They only do exactly what you tell them. And the beautiful thing about software is it can be on a machine. It can be on the internet. It can be on the tabulators. It can be in the roll level. It can be in the clerk's office. It can be anywhere. So there are these algorithms basically dispersed throughout the election that make this very simple. So you don't need to have thousands of people, you know, watching the computer in real time. The only thing you need is you need people to go out and drop paper ballots in boxes.
Wow.
And that's what 2000 Mules was showing.
Yep. Okay, lots more to unpack. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Dr. Douglas Frank. He discovered the algorithms that led to the election fraud in 2020. Stay with us. Back in our final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show, we're talking today with Dr. Douglas Frank. He discovered several of the algorithms used to manipulate our elections. And going on to that last break, you said something I really wanted to focus in on. You said that these algorithms can be hidden anywhere. And right now we've got a court case up in Washington County that they are fighting desperately not to release a database. And a database is normally just a list of data. I mean, it's you know, numbers and text files and everything else. So can an algorithm be hidden in a database, and would that explain why the Washington County is so desperate to hide that?
That's absolutely true. Algorithms can be hidden in databases. In this case, in the Washington County case, it's actually a SQL database. The SQL database is not just like a text file. It's a collection of logs. It's a collection of algorithms and instructions that is designed to allow operations to be take place on that set of data. So it's not just like a text file. It's called a SQL database. And the fact that a voter system has a SQL database built into it alone is suspicious. In other words, a machine is equipped with the ability to manipulate the data. That alone is suspicious. Really, we want to have dumb machines. We want machines that are incapable of doing anything fancy. They should only be able to count, you know, and maybe a little bit of adjudication, you know, if it can't quite figure out one ballot, you know, did they vote for Trump or did they vote for Biden? Can't make it out. You know, that's called adjudication. You don't want a machine to be able to manipulate too much, because then suddenly all this stuff can happen. And that's what we proved in the Mesa 3 report from Mesa, Colorado. And by the way, once it was discovered that the Mesa County forensic images were available, then the whole state went ballistic. Guess what? That's sort of analogous to what's happening to you, right? As the data are suddenly becoming available, now your Secretary of State's very concerned about it. It's almost the replay of what happened last year in Mesa County. Hmm. So I'm anxious to see it myself. I've completed the application with the attorney, Steve Jonkis. He's trying to bring me into the case. I'm volunteering to do this. There's no money involved here. I just want to have a chance to look at it. I have to sign the NDA and have a look at it myself. And I fully expect to see some benign stuff, as you point out, just databases. But the fact that the Secretary of State is so concerned about it makes me suspect that there's more in there, like perhaps like the computer logs or the SQL logs, what's been going on internally. If it exposes operations that have been going on internally, that would be very scary to them. But even more interestingly, since the Attorney General admitted publicly that these, with access to this information, people on the outside who are, even with the machines not connected directly to the internet, would be able to hack in, suggests, I don't know since I haven't seen it yet, suggests that perhaps the internet logs are also there. Mm. In other words, it would give away IP addresses, it would give away usernames and passwords. And those are the exact sorts of things that were revealed in the Mesa County data. So if those are truly in there, we're going to have a field day in your state, and your state's going to be national news. Perhaps that's why your Secretary of State is so concerned.
Well, it would certainly explain why they have gone just completely overboard and ballistic about fighting the release of a database, because, you know, normally these things are just, you know, it's just data. It's a compilation of data. So I know that one of the things that you had said to Mike Lindell was that as far as your algorithm is concerned, it's down to parts per million, that it simply cannot be done by humans, that this was clearly a machine and computer applying this algorithm. So looking at that from the outside, wouldn't that be a little too obvious? I mean, why did they decide to rely on something that, to an observer such as yourself, this is clearly computer manipulated?
Well, I think the answer to that is that our clerks typically are not data analysts. You know, they're more like CPA types. Mm. They are administrators. And so election administrators don't really have the skills typically to do the kind of analyses that I'm doing. And so unless you are highly motivated to spend quite a bit of time analyzing the data and you have the skills, it's not easy to uncover. Mm-hmm. So even though now that I've exposed it, it's easy to understand, why didn't a whole bunch of other people discover it? Well, because it's somewhat obscure. You have to kind of know what kinds of things to look for, and you have to know then have the analytical ability and tools to be able to do the searching. So, you know, that's my field of expertise. So like I said earlier on in the interview, I recognize algorithms. Why? Because I write them. So it's like I kind of know what to look for. Whereas most people, including election people, they're not computer programmers. They don't think that way. So it's not as obvious as you might think.
Hmm. So in terms of the solutions to this, one of the things that you guys did was you went to 1,600 homes. And you had predicted that 30% of the addresses to which you went would have at least one phantom voter. The rolls say that John Smith lives here, but when you knock on the door, you find out that there is no John Smith there. You actually found that 32% had phantom voters. So is that the solution to fixing this here in Oregon, is we really need to start doing some of this canvassing?
Absolutely. I've been advocating strongly for that. The reason why I advocate for canvassing is, you know, in the early days, the experiment you just referred to, I'm a physicist, right? So what do? I analyze data, I make a model, I do an experiment. If the experiment confirms my model, I'm on the right track. If it doesn't confirm my model, I need to change. The fact that I was able to predict so accurately, you know, I predicted 30% and it was 32%. The fact that I was able to predict so accurately told me I was on the right track. So in the early days, I was thinking of canvassing that I could show the world how much fraud there was. But what I've learned over the year is that's really a secondary function. Think about the example you just gave. You knock on the door and John Smith doesn't live there. Well, what about the people that do live there? They've just been shown that fraud's taking place from their house and they had no idea.
Hmm.
And what those two people do is they tell everybody else in their neighborhood, hey, somebody's mailing in a ballot from my residence and it's fraud. And so it's evangelism. Knocking on the doors.
That's a great way to put it.
And talking to people, you're spreading the word. The second thing that happens when you do canvassing, and this is so important, if you're the canvasser, you just found a phantom voter with your own two hands. It motivates you. You tell your friends, and then guess what? You'll bring two or three people with you next week.
Yep.
And it sweeps whole communities. And so there's a reason why the canvassing is important. It's not just the data. You need the whole community to understand their elections are being stolen.
And I think
then they are willing to stand up and not submit to this sort of election anymore.
Yes, and I think we desperately need that here in Oregon. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock. Dr. Frank, I want to thank you so much. We'd love to have you back.
I'd be delighted.
If the county and state are in fact working to hide the database because it contains the algorithm to commit election fraud, then obviously they know it's there. And if they know, then how many others across the states know about the big cheat? Remember, it took hundreds of FBI, CIA, NSA, and DOJ agents all working together to push the Russia collusion hoax and to keep it alive. They were willing to send people to jail over it to hide their own crimes. If they looked into the camera and lied about that, of course they would look into the camera and tell you that there was no election fraud. Of course they would lie. Here's the thing. They have to. They have to lie. I know sometimes it feels like we can't do anything. Well, things are in the works, but what you can definitely do right now is to pray. Pray for the spiritual and emotional conviction of those involved, that they cannot rest for fear of discovery, that they know people will find out, and that they know deep in their soul that they will get no rest until they come forward and come clean. Pray for the judge that he'll actually listen. Pray for the attorney and witnesses that they'll have the words and evidence they need to pry this loose, and that it does in fact contain what they think it does. Sometimes all it takes is a little intercession for a miracle, and this would be a big one. Do that, won't you? Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.